This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. 6 minutes past one. We are talking all things Geralds and Brooks today. Mario's with me. We're going to have a long chat about what it means to be part of Melbourne's hospitality scene. Stay with me. Yes, good afternoon. We are talking cravings. Six, almost 7 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. Pete Dillon with you. This is Cravings here on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9. Thank you to the lovely team at TechnoGaze. As I've said before, and I'll say it again, I always learn something when I listen to that program. It's a very good show. Thanks also to Shannon Gillies for the news and the lovely team at Saturday Magazine. How good was Jen Brister? I would suggest you get along and see her show. Today we're going to talk about the hospitality industry in Melbourne from somebody who's been a part of it for, well, Mario, am I allowed to say how many years you've been a part of this industry?
Yeah, sure. More than 20.
More than 20 years. And I guess you've seen, it's Mario. He's here from Gerald's Bar. Oh, it's from Gerald's Bar and from Brooks. So Brooks in the city, Gerald's Bar in, is it Collingwood or North?
Carlton North.
Carlton North. I do get a bit confused. So you've been a part of this industry for several decades. What's been the most extraordinary evolution that you've witnessed over the last 20 years or more?
Probably when I first started, the first revolution we had in food was Nouvelle Cuisine.
Oh, where it was the plate the size of a football field and a couple of peas on it.
Well, where it was produce-driven cuisine with imagination and bringing the true flavours of what you were putting on the plate sort of back to the plate. Mm. The other side of the Nouvelle Cuisine movement was the large plate with very little food on it.
But that was a stupid period we went through.
Yeah, it got ridiculous. You know, it sort of got to the stage where we were sort of strawberries with beefsteak and large plates and butterflies, and it did get ridiculous.
Yes, it was.
But the essence of it was always fresh produce, moving away from that old-fashioned cuisine where they were using heavy sauces to cover flavours or to add flavours, and bringing really, really natural flavours sort of back to the plate, and having produce-driven cuisine, and moving away from the classical dishes and letting the chef be imaginative. So that was the first movement. So
I think it's also where we got rid of a lot of those stiff white hats we used to wear. Because I'm a chef myself, and I remember doing my apprenticeship, we had to wear those crazy big tall white
hats. Ridiculous.
It was quite bizarre.
Not sure what the health reasons for that were, but yeah.
I don't know whose idea it was in the first place, because it's not practical.
No, at all.
Walking around the kitchen, you've got to duck into a cupboard and all of a sudden your hat's on the floor.
That's right.
And there's so many chefs that have got little or no hair, myself included, going bald from wearing those stupid hats.
Yeah. And then the introduction of the paper ones, which was a great idea as well.
Especially when you're sweating in a kitchen. They either catch on fire or they get like clag on your forehead because they're stuck to your head.
Did you work as a chef in Melbourne?
I did some of the last of my apprenticeship in Melbourne. But that was back in the cold, dark days of the Cold War in the 80s.
Right. Well, it was the same period. I sort of...
It was.
I started 85, 86.
I was turning into a third year apprentice. I started my apprenticeship in 1984.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So,
do you remember the restaurant?
Yes, there was. I worked at the San Francisco Bar and Grill when it was around.
Yeah.
And I also did some time at Xinhua.
Wow.
Mm.
Okay. Xinhua was fantastic.
Oh, it was so hot right now.
Yeah. Mm. It was. I remember its opening. I remember eating there a couple of times, and just the whole idea that East meets West, sort of just slightly crossing over.
Yes.
And they did a great job with
it. And, you know, it was around the time, at that time in Melbourne, Mario, where there was Stephanie Alexander was in her youth, Mietta O'Donnell, Tony Rogelsky, when Richard Frank had his restaurant, right. Ian Hewitson had Memories of the Mediterranean at Rockman's Regency. It was that very, it was the 80s, for heaven's sake.
Well, it was one of the big differences that I can say between that era and this era is that was the era of the restaurateur. Now we have the era of the entrepreneur. Chef. No, the entrepreneur.
Okay.
For not everywhere, but a lot of places, there's, you know, suddenly the restaurateurs disappeared and the entrepreneurs sort of come into the scene. And they love talking about facts and figures. Because a restaurateur loves talking about great food, wine and food and service and you know.
Yes,
and
those days.
You know, the classic thing about the great restaurateur, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and there's some customers that just want to stay a little bit longer. So he'll stay with them and keep them.
Well, for me, because I moved from kitchens to front of house sort of a couple of years after I finished because I didn't really like cooking anymore. And not that I didn't like it, it was not where I should have been.
Yes.
And so I'd get to the point, if there were people sitting on that last bottle of wine and they'd finished the bottle of wine and then, you know, they're all sitting around sipping on half a glass and someone's got a half a macchiato left, I'd just get the vacuum cleaner out and start hoovering around them because I needed to have a laugh.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear from you, and I'm sure Mario would love to hear from you. 0427 Joy 949. So 0427 569 949. That's the number to send an SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300 Joy 949, or you can send a tweet to cravings_Joy 949. We're doing a bit of an exploration of the industry with somebody who's still successful with two venues operating in Melbourne and making a little bit of money, and at the same time can share a lot of the journey of the last 20 or 30 years. Because I have to introduce this now. I'm really sorry, Mario.
Please.
But next Saturday on the program, I will have Heston Blumenthal.
Oh, wow.
Luke Newen and Ben Shuri. It is going to be a huge program next Saturday. I should have 3 hours for it, but they won't give it to me. Heston will join us next week. Ben Shuri will join us next week, and he's a good mate of Heston's, and we'll probably grab Luke Newen on the phone as well. And, you know, it's a celebrity chef-a-rama, which is itself oxymoronic.
Yeah, in a way.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's, I suppose in our era, that 80s, there was the Paul Bocuse's and Alain Chappelle's, which were mild celebrities, you know, they were still, but now.
But people outside the industry didn't know who they were.
True, very true.
Now you open a coffee store and everybody knows who the chef is. It's 13 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Mario is with me from Gerald's and from Brooks, and we'll be back to have a further exploration of the industry after some messages and a bit of a tune.
Joy 94.9.
Mario and I are waxing lyrical about, we've determined we've sort of grown up in Melbourne in the industry over the last few decades. I did start talking to you about the evolution of the industry, and we talked about celebrity chefs. I think it's such an oxymoronic thing. You know, there were chefs in our day, but
Not to this level.
Outside of a kitchen or outside of the industry?
Not to this level.
Nobody knew of them.
And the irony, I think it was Ferran Adrià sort of spoke a little about the celebrity chef. It's like, I don't want to go to someone's restaurant when the chef is not in the kitchen.
Well, this
doesn't make sense.
Exactly. I caught up with another very well-known celebrity chef recently, and that interview will be playing in June. He was out here on a visit, but I can't play it until June.
Right.
And he was saying, you know, there's a lot of chefs that don't want to be celebrity chefs, but simply because of circumstance have become so. And it's quite, there's a lot of pressure on chefs compared to, you know, back in our day, Mario, we'd sort of cook some food, slap it on a plate and serve it.
Yep.
Very nice food and very nice plates, very expensive plates. But
yes.
It seems to be that, you know, if there's a hairdresser opening a new Tony and Guy outlet, that they've got a celebrity chef in there.
Yep.
It's like footballers were 10 years ago, where they're invited to everything. It's now
now the celebrity chefs. Yeah.
It's quite extraordinary. And you're right, if they are spending their time out at events and, you know, the opening of a head wound, who's cooking?
That's right. Who's cooking? And who's in the kitchen?
And it sort of it makes me wonder, is it diluting the ability of those guys by having somebody else at their stoves? Look, some people may say that's not correct.
Yeah. I think there's also a fine line. I think you find with, you know, your great chefs that are at the cutting edge, et cetera, it's like they're still in the kitchen a lot of the time.
Yes.
And, you know, they've got a great angle on what's going on in their kitchen, their restaurant. But then there's that little, that next level sometimes where they're barely in the restaurant.
Exactly.
Because they're, you know, that next level up of celebrity, they've got their own shows, and that takes up a lot of time. And also for the chef, for that chef, it's like, it's promoting the restaurant, promoting your business, trying to get people into
to the point where you can't get into those venues now. You know, I mentioned Ben Shuri just before the break that he'll be joining me next Saturday. I know people who've been trying to get into Attica for 3 months.
Yeah, right.
And can't get a table. And that's not because Ben's not there, because Ben's out being a celebrity. No. Ben is, in fact, there so many nights of the week and works his bum off. And, you know, he's a great example
of that sort of chef.
Yeah,
always pushing the envelope, working hard, never being satisfied with where he's at, you know, wanting to go that next level. And
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. What's been the most difficult thing for you in the industry? It's been... You know, we're probably talking close to 30 years.
Yeah. I think the changes from the back house of, or the administration, the financial side of the business, that it's for small business now, there's so much more work to do back of house.
Yep.
GST, BASs, compliance with the emergency services, so on and so forth.
It's red tape.
Yeah, correct. Where it takes you away from what you really want to be doing, which is running your business and hosting and being at the front of the restaurant.
Being on the floor.
Correct.
Or in the kitchen.
Mm. Yeah. So that's been a huge change. I remember sort of back in the 90s, it was a lot easier to make money out of a restaurant.
Well, now people are saying a successful restaurant is making about 3% net profit.
Which, you know, the bank will give you more than that. Yeah.
It's tuppence. Yeah. So it's anybody that says they want to open a restaurant because they think it's a glamorous idea, go out and shoot yourself now, because it is hard work.
It's hard work. It's rewarding, but it's hard work.
Absolutely. And there are some people that are born to this industry that should never divert at all. There was a story this week in, it was actually Thursday and Friday, there's the ACTU are putting a claim for an increase to the minimum wage, up another $27.
Yep.
John Hart from the Restaurant and Catering Association Australia on the radio said, we can't afford another raise at all, zero.
Yep.
There are some people saying, you know, we can afford $8 a week. What's your opinion on where that minimum wage should sit? Controversial and challenging question off the cuff.
No, not at all. I suppose I'm courting two minds because as a small business person, I know that's going to affect us. I know it's going to make it a little bit harder for us. I, you know, as we're saying, the margins aren't there just to be overly generous. By the same token, as a long-term left person, I do want to see, you know, basic workers sort of get what they're entitled to.
Exactly.
What I'd love to see is CEOs and board of directors and managers of multi-million dollar
and
corporations.
John Hart.
Yes, and banks and so on. So maybe reduce their wages, and perhaps the government give small businesses a little bit of a break.
Is that a little bit utopian, though, in thought? Or in principle?
I don't think so. I think it's a really practical thing to do. If they make it easier for small business, which is a huge employer right across Australia, to actually make a little bit more money, which means we'll pay more taxes, which means we'll employ more people.
Do you employ your staff above award?
Some.
Yep.
Some and some on award.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, but certainly, you know, sort of your managers, assistant managers, someone else.
Yep. Yeah. And it's, people may think that, again, hospitality is a glamorous world. It's actually not a very high-paying industry.
No. In comparison to I know the finance sector or a lot of other
construction sector.
Construction sector, yeah.
Where people have gone 3 or 4 years to get a trade, Sparkies, yep. and I'm not talking across the board. There are a lot of people who don't earn above the minimum wage that do have a trade, but there are a lot of people who do because tradespeople are highly sought after.
Yep, absolutely. In comparison, we're fairly poorly paid.
There is a bit of a shortage at the moment of chefs. There is every second day of the week I will get a text message, I'll get a phone call, I'll get an email. Pete, we're looking for a sous chef, or we're looking for a head chef, or we're looking for a chef to join our team. And I'm astounded at the amount of businesses. And I know if you are a chef looking for a job, do get in touch. You can send an SMS to 0427JOY949. You can email onair@joy.org.au or send a tweet to cravings_joy949. I know countless businesses that are looking for startups and established businesses who are looking for a sous chef, looking for a head chef.
Yep.
It's crazy. It is. And I wonder how we can fix it. There are less people going into the industry as chefs because they think they can go on to MasterChef and have a career. But I also think the mining boom, to some degree, is taking these guys into small communities. They're earning $140,000 a year to cook at a pub.
Yep.
And
in their minds, we'll do it for 3 or 4 years and we've paid off our house.
Exactly.
We've done what we have to do. And also the increase in restaurants and cafes. The increase in demand.
Well, there's a lot more of them than there ever was.
Yeah. And we sponsor two chefs.
Yep.
They're both, one's from England, one's from Scotland.
Yep.
Because of that, to find that level of chef to sort of work at a place like Brooks is really hard. And, you know, as we said, there's a lot more restaurants. Teams are diluted. I told the story sort of a few years ago. It was almost like there was one qualified chef, one qualified front of house person, and then
the rest were on 4, 5, 7 visas.
or students on holidays, you know? And it's like, let's go forth. And the pressure's amazing, you know, so when you're working like that.
Especially for people who think that going into the industry is going to, you know, I can go and do this and it'll be quite easy and I'll do my 30 hours a week and walk away. It's
correct.
Never. You know, you've got markets that need to be got to at 5:30 in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning. People don't realise that chefs are actually out of bed doing that.
Yep.
They're still in the kitchen at 11 o'clock at night.
Correct.
Making sure orders are in for the next day, that the staff are being taken care of, that their quality control standards are at the level.
Yep.
Chefs are working incredibly long hours.
Yep. 14, 15 hour days.
And, you know, they might be taking home 60 grand a year. It's not considerable. Not
correct. Once you sort of go backwards and divide it back, it's
not a lot of money. Hourly rate of about $6 an hour, and you can get more than that flipping burgers at McDonald's. Yep. It's quite insane. We can talk about this all afternoon, which we probably will. It's coming up to 27 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Mario is with me from Gerald's Bar and from Brooks. We're going to talk more about the industry and about a couple of events that are happening at
Brooks.
Yep. With Nick Pollard, the chef who formerly of Embrass, the man who received death threats for wanting to serve horse. He's a controversial little man. We'll talk about that, but of course we'd love to hear from you. 0427JOY949.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Yes, indeed you are. It's 27 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9. This is Cravings, your favourite hour of food and beverage. Don't forget, we have some spaces left for next Sunday. It is the annual Joy Trivia Show. Make sure you either get your own table or join somebody else's. It's just $20 per person. Call 1-300-JOY-949 or you can, just pop straight into the studio and say hello to folk. Mario is with me from Gerald's Bar and from Brooks right here in the city. We're talking about the evolution of an industry, but some funny stories. I mentioned Heston Blumenthal and you've got a terrific story to tell about him.
Well, it's a rumour which has been spread by my business partner, Gerald.
Oh, as he did, of course.
But apparently it was true. He saw it all. I was asleep in bed, of course.
Yes.
But after the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, might have been 4 years ago or 5 years ago when he was out.
5 years ago.
Yeah, they all proceeded to come back to Gerald's Bar for a bit of a lock-in and a few drinks.
Which does happen on occasion when there are visiting international chefs. Yeah, I can attest to that.
By the end of the night, which was the wee hours of the morning, Heston Blumenthal is on the Gerald's Bar ladder, being pushed up and down the bar, while one of his favourite records, which was The Specials, were playing. So
I can actually see that happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reason we mentioned Heston, he will be on the show next week. I will keep reminding you of that all week because it's It's big news.
Do you remember the mango incident?
Oh, the mango incident. That'd be Attica?
Yeah, that would be Attica.
Oh, do tell. I'm trying to remember the mango incident. I'll leave it in your hands to tell that story.
Well, we were having dinner at Attica in the little private dining room to the side. And
yes.
All of a sudden, someone started throwing bits of bread across the dining room. And as we turned around, who was it but Pete Dillon? A little bit inebriated, having a good time. Mm. So as
I find it very hard to believe.
As I walked through to the back garden, as I came back, I saw a mango ripening on the shelf, so I grabbed it. I wrote a little message on it, sent it over to Pete. Pete then drew a little diagram on the mango that turned the little mango into a little mango man, and then sent it back to our table.
I find all this very hard to believe, and you're making
it's
me
it's all
blush.
Truth.
You're making me blush. Hey, 7th of April, you've got an event on at Brooks.
Yep.
And now, Nick Pollard, who's, as we mentioned before, was the Shepherd and Brass. Yep. Why did he come and work for you guys? I know that he was
It sort of happened over a long period. He was at Embrass. We would eat at his restaurant. He'd come and drink at Gerald's Bar. Mm-hmm. And over many late night drinks into the wee hours of the morning, we always talked about doing something together. We formed a great friendship, and we shared a similar philosophy. Then we had the opportunity to do Brooks.
Yep.
And, of course, we needed high-caliber chef. And we approached Nick, and Nick jumped on board.
Well, he was probably pleased to be able to walk away because he had his own restaurant, and the challenge behind that, of course, is extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the great pleasure for him is now he just concentrates on the kitchen and cooking.
And what he does best.
Correct. Rather than worrying about all the other bits and pieces that...
that go with it. VAT statements and GST and paying staff and paying suppliers and working out
and
which...
plumbing not working and...
Working out which supplier is most urgent to be paid so that you end up with fruit and vegetables in the kitchen tomorrow. It is a juggling act. Tell me about Pasi Patanen.
He was the head chef at Mark for about 8 years until recently. So Mark is Mark's best restaurant in Sydney.
So he's got Sydney and, of course, Pay Modern here in Melbourne.
Correct. Mm. And Pasi is originally from Finland.
Oh, he's a Finnish chef.
Yes, his name's Pasi Patanen.
We don't hear a lot of
chef.
I mean, obviously Nordic cuisine being the cuisine du jour.
At the moment, yes.
Yes.
But so he left Mark. He opened up a little pop-up restaurant, which was supposed to be very temporary for about 6 months.
Yep.
In a building that was going to be developed for apartments. It was called Paci Cafe, P-A-C-I. The place has gone off. It's been almost full from day one.
Chef's hat?
Not sure, but...
Somebody will tell me if it's Pat Nurse from Gourmet Traveller.
Pat Nurse from Gourmet Traveller sort of said it was the best thing that happened to Sydney last year. So that's a great
endorsement. If Pat's got his finger on it, then you realise it's a good thing.
The only reason I'm questioning a chef's hat was because he was supposed to close after 6 months.
Of course.
But yes, but the development was delayed.
Yes, of course.
And he's still open.
Yeah.
So Pasi and Nick sort of share a similar
haircut.
Yes, good observation, Pete. Of all the things to notice,
well, a couple of bowls. They look like a couple of bowling balls in the back.
No comment.
No.
But they share a similar ethos in cooking. Was what I was about to say. They're both produce driven. They're inventive. They're a little bit tricky. They love pure flavours.
Well, Nick's food's extraordinary. I've eaten Nick's food on numerous occasions at when he was at Embrass and events with Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, and of course at Brooks now. And so he has a deft touch with his food looks like it tastes.
Yes,
and that's we eat so much with our eyes, and to look at a plate of Nick's food, it is a joy to behold visually.
Absolutely.
And then the taste and the texture just
which is even more important. Yeah. He's got a strong connection with flavour and food. Yeah. It's not just... He won't put, for example... He won't use shiso paste or put a foam on a plate because he wants to show you that he can make a foam.
Well, we can all make a foam. Yeah. It's a very simple thing. Shake up a can of Coke. This is not rocket science.
But he'll put everything that's on that plate because... It's connected to him and it's connected to whatever's going on in that plate, and it tells a story.
And that's, I want to go back to this idea that that's what food is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be about TV appearances and opening events and $10,000 Rolex watches.
Yes.
It is about creating something that tells your story, that shows heart and soul on a place.
Yep.
And it's a very simple philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely. I had words with a well-known Melbourne chef who I won't sort of name. And after years of sort of being well-known in the media and travelling around and changing restaurants, I finally said to that person one night over a few drinks, just shut the F up, get back in the kitchen and cook. Just shut up and cook.
Because that is all required.
Correct. That's all you need to do. The rest of it is bullshit.
Well, it is.
What you need to be in that kitchen, connected to your food, and need to be cooking. That's what you
do. And that brings you sort of to the point you made earlier about, or that we made earlier about celebrity chefs being disconnected from their venues. And I also questioned, I had a really interesting discussion in here one day with Pete Evans and Ben Shuri.
Yes.
Two people who could not be more diametrically opposed to one another philosophically. At the time, Pete was with the group that he had in Sydney.
Yep.
What were they called?
I don't know.
Three or four restaurants. Yeah. So they had the pantry here in Brighton, and they had three restaurants in Sydney, one in the Cross and one in Manly. And they're fantastic restaurants. And Pete's a really good guy. I have a lot of time for Pete.
Absolutely.
And Ben Shuri was sort of sitting here, and Pete was talking about opening another venue. And I looked at Ben and I said, is this going to be one day? And he said, I could never do it.
Yep.
And so it's interesting, again, going back to that philosophy, that there is that heart and that soul on the plate.
Yep. Absolutely.
And we are waxing lyrical here, Mario, but I think it takes us back to, and I don't want to sound like an old person, but it takes us back to a time where our focus, when we certainly started in the industry, the idea was to be inventive.
Yes.
Within certain boundaries. I remember one of the very first menus that I wrote as a head chef after I qualified. I was working in this little tiny restaurant in Essendon.
Yeah.
T. Gezzard was working around the corner at a restaurant. I can't remember what the restaurant was that he was at.
Yeah.
And I had lamb's brains, which I crumbed. I'd poach them, and I'd crumb them with sesame seed and crushed macadamia.
Yum.
Because macadamias were quite cool.
Yes, absolutely.
And then they'd be...
Discovering our own cuisine.
Yeah, then they would be deep fried, and I would serve them in a sauce that was made from apples, some lemon thyme, which I'd managed to find, or lemon myrtle or something, some Calvados, which is an apple brandy, finished with cream, and that was just a couple of little brains, a little bit of sauce, a couple of slices of poached apple.
Sounds
and
great.
that was the thing, and I thought I was, I thought I was sophisticated.
Well, you were.
And now I see snail porridge and bacon and egg ice cream and go, why didn't I think of that?
I bet you if you put those brains on a plate with that sauce, it would still hold up.
Oh, it would. And that's, you know, I was having another discussion the other day about food from the 80s and you know, bringing back deep-fried camembert with a cranberry relish some of those other things that we ate in the 80s that would still stand up.
If they were done well.
Absolutely.
That was the thing. We sort of lost our way a little bit we were young back then, but walking into a restaurant, deep-fried camembert was Danish camembert out of a tin.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Exactly. But if you use something a King Island Folks Cove that was done with a panko crumb or done with a different... Yep. I mean, it could be really sexy.
Look, absolutely.
Let's come back and talk about that because that makes me excited. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It's 17 minutes to 2.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
There's a very lovely smile on your face, Mario.
Just Gabriel Gatte.
He's a dude. And again, through that sort of 80s and 90s period,
he was
one of the first television chefs.
Yeah. Peter Russell Clark.
Bernard King. Ian Parmenter.
Yeah.
You know, those were the guys that were on TV through that era in the 80s. So, early 90s. Margaret Chong.
Yes, Margaret Chong.
Bless her heart. I've still got a Margaret Chong wok that is one of my prized kitchen possessions. Over all the other fancy equipment I've got in my home kitchen, I've got a Margaret Chong wok that I love. And it's never...
And it works.
It's never cocked up.
Yeah.
It's never let me down.
Sometimes you sort of walk through and you see these new... non-stick, really thick.
Teflon, heavy.
No, the whole idea of the wok is it's just a thin piece of metal and it comes alive and burns and smokes. And
it won't work on an induction stove. we've been having discussions at home because we're looking to buy a house that we... I'm for induction, my partner's for gas. And I went,
yeah,
you know
what? Get an induction wok cooker, believe it or not, which is indented.
Oh, shut up.
Yes, I'm telling you.
Hello,
I'm not sure.
Friends, it's Meg. Are you listening? Yeah. Are you listening? Are you listening?
I think it's that other brand that does it.
Oh, is it? All right.
That G brand, but...
Oh, Gaggenau. Yeah, I do like Gaggenau. They've done Benchery's Lab that we were talking about. Okay. Talking about Ben before. He'll be in next Saturday. Well, I believe they did it. Though they're part of it. Anyway.
They
talk to Ben about Gaggenau next week. We were reminiscing before about food that was taking us back to the 80s, deep fried camembert in particular. It's taken me on another tangent with you now about some of the changes that we did. I think we've gone full circle from probably the late 60s into the 70s, where my food influence sort of started to come from. My mother was the worst cook in the world. And we've gone back to a time where it's about produce we can grow or get hold of.
Yes.
It's about simplicity.
Yes.
It's about flavour.
Yep.
So provenance, simplicity, flavour.
Yep.
And just that... You know, I'm seeing bread and butter puddings and crumbles and things on menus, and I'm like, you know, that's 30, 40 years ago.
And it's still valid.
And it still works. Yeah. We've sort of seen these peaks and troughs from molecular gastronomy and foams and sands and dirts. And
well, it's almost like everything is in now.
Mm.
Every cuisine, every at the highest level, with the the Venturis and Nick and Parsi, you know, where they're exploring, pushing the boundaries at one end, to walking into a cafe and having a beautiful homemade bread and butter pudding.
I went the other day. There's a place around the corner from my office, and we went there by accident. I was with a client looking for a sandwich, and it's been there since the 80s. It's an Italian restaurant.
Yes.
And I had a gnocchi gorgonzola.
And was it good?
And my God, it was incredible. The gnocchi was just these soft pellets. Yeah. I didn't feel full when I finished it, which is always a good sign with
Absolutely.
Gnocchi.
Absolutely.
It wasn't heavy and claggy. Yep. It was really light.
Yeah.
You know, a cream made with blue cheese, garlic, and cream. I mean, a sauce
made
with...
You can't go wrong.
Blue cheese, garlic, and cream. Yeah. Yum.
But actually, you could go wrong.
Mm.
Like you said, it could become this gluggy,
heavy, fatty,
horrible,
split.
Correct. Thing, rather than having these light pillows just bound by the blue cheese.
Oh, stop it. It's making me all excited again. I'm going to go back. And it was an accident that we found this place. And it seriously, the guy that looked after our table would have been 70 in the shade.
Yeah, right. Fantastic.
And you know, the place is all sort of 80s wood, and they serve you bread with margarine on it.
Fantastic.
You know, sliced white bread, white baguette that's been sliced, got a bit of margarine on it. Yeah. It's in a little cane basket with a paper serviette in it. I mean, there's nothing, it was like a trip back in time.
Yeah. God bless them.
God bless them indeed.
For still being alive.
There should be more of them. There should be more of them. So our event at Brooks is on the 7th of April.
7th of April, Monday night. It's $140. Nicholas Pollard, Percy Patanen, both cooking the menu, obviously, cooking together.
Matched wine.
$140 plus drinks. There will be matched wines available on the night.
Yep.
Or you can just order lots of cocktails.
Well, it's a rare opportunity to have somebody like Percy cook with
Absolutely.
Nick, because he's Sydney-based. He's got his own venue.
Yep.
He's, you know, humping his ass trying to make a buck.
Absolutely.
And Nick's down here doing the same thing. It's difficult for them to get together. So that's the 7th of April. You can go to the website.
brooksofmelbourne.com.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Right,
and they're both very excited about it. I've heard them talking on the phone. They're like two little bald-headed children.
Oh, how cute. Munchkins indeed. I sort of want to go back to the start of our discussion about your journey. So how did you get involved with Gerald, and what sort of brought you to this point?
I'd known Gerald since the 1990s. We briefly worked together at the Gypsy Bar, which was a bit of a Melbourne institution back then in Brunswick Street. And I'd worked a little bit with Gerald at the Kent Hotel when he had that, and also the Locarno when he had that.
Yep.
Our sort of life paths separated for quite a few years. We met at a funeral of a mutual person that we knew a few years ago. He said, I'm opening up a bar in Melbourne, back in North Carlton where my children are. I said, yeah, give me a call. I was working on a different project. I finished that project. We started talking. I was sort of in between. I was a bit discouraged with hospitality. Lost. Yeah. Mm. We shared a similar philosophy. We started working together. He offered me a partnership in the bar, which was fantastic. And as I say, the rest is history.
The rest, as they say, indeed.
But we get on very, very well. We do share very much an old world philosophy. And that's why it's great working with Nick and Brooks. Brooks, for me, was a clash of almost cultures of something modern that Nick was going to be putting on the plate.
But still sort of that old-fashioned...
Correct. Tablecloths and...
Hospitality.
Yes, that's what we wanted. Mm. We wanted so many... Restaurants you go to these days, it's almost like you feel like you have to pay reverence to either the chef or the restaurant itself.
You see the chef.
Yes. And if you don't, you're considered rude. But we want to pay reverence back to the customer.
And which is what the industry is. You know, it is a service industry. It is the hospitality industry. It is about hospitality.
Correct.
It's like welcoming people into your home.
Absolutely, yes.
And there's a number of places, you guys included, that do it exceptionally well in Melbourne.
Thank you.
I think one of the places where I have found is a Pocker.
Yes, right. Yep,
It's like you are in their lounge room.
Absolutely.
Sitting in their dining room.
Absolutely.
They're doing some Garrodon service.
Yeah,
which is
fantastic. Their cheese trolley is amazing.
Well, they've got a huge Parmigiana wheel.
Yeah.
A wheel of cheese.
Yeah.
And they mix a pasta in that
wheel. Oh, wow.
And serve the pasta to you from the cheese.
Cheese, fantastic.
And it is just exceptional. If you do go and check out Apoca, if you're a food lover, Apoca is somewhere where you should go and just experience that hospitality. From the minute... You know, from
the front door to
there's something under the table to hang your handbag on, so you don't have to put it on the floor or
small details.
Hang it on somewhere else. You know, your coat is taken. The newspapers are there every day for people who are dining on their own and want to read a newspaper.
Yep.
You know, those very simple little things.
Yep. Which all
add up to exceptional hospitality.
Well, it's a thing with great things, isn't it? It's not one thing in particular.
It's everything.
That's right. It's a combination of a thousand small details that come together to form, you know.
And those small details aren't expensive.
No. Absolutely.
You know, your food's got to back up. The food's got to be solid.
Absolutely.
It doesn't need to change the world, but it's got to be solid.
Absolutely.
You've got to have a wine list that is going to appeal to a very broad market.
Yes.
Which, again, is not hard to do. We are surrounded by, you know, four or five premium wine regions. Yarra Valley, Mornington,
correct.
Nagambi, Macedon, you know, just within an hour and an hour and a half of Melbourne.
Yeah.
There's some of the finest wines in the country.
Absolutely.
So, you know, a decent wine list... Some quality food, like I said, doesn't have to be earth-shattering, changing. No. It's food. If the food's good, if the wine list is reasonable, and you can choose something that suits your budget and suits your palate, and
good
all of
service.
Those other little things. Good service is the... You can get away with a bad meal if your service is good.
Yes.
You will never get away with a good meal and bad service because you leave a venue and you remember bad service.
Correct, always. Actually, I have to disagree with that. I've been to some little places around the corner up the alleyway of the streets of Melbourne where there's no service, but the food I'd go back to. But it's cheap enough not to...
Well, we were talking before we came on here and we were sitting outside about Shandong Mama and the,
fantastic.
Those
mackerel. But their service is great.
And their service is incredible. But there is nothing about that restaurant that is that is a chef's hat.
Except
but those mackerel,
food.
Those mackerel dumplings are just to absolute...
My favourite part of that restaurant... is the LCD screen at the front window with her in her all made up and that stiff Chinese brown hair.
Which hasn't moved for about 12 years. What's global warming?
Making those beautiful dumplings. I love it.
And the dumplings are exceptional. Mario, we'll come back and close off the show in just
a
minute.
You.
We'll have a couple of messages and we'll be back to say farewell.
Joy.
Mario, did you just tell me we're a pair of old bastards?
Well, no, I said I felt like an old bastard. I wasn't referring to you, Peter, but since
well,
it's the same generation.
Well, I believe I started work before you, so that's right. Quite bizarre. It's been a very joyful discussion. Thank you so much for coming in and spending some time. I think we've covered a lot of ground, and there's still probably more we can cover in the next couple of minutes. Oh.
Cough button.
Having a little choke here. I probably need a cup of tea. It's actually made me hungry. Where do you like to go and eat?
Well, to be quite honest, just before I popped in here, I was at Shandong Mama.
Yes.
I love Asian, not street food per se, because it's not really on the street, but it is on the street. But I love places like Shandong Mama.
Simple, clean,
beautiful walk-in, fresh, great beautiful food. Flavors.
There's a place that we go to over in Chinatown called the New Kum Din.
New Kum Din.
So there is the Kum Din.
Yes.
And I'm not kidding you. KUM. So the Kum Din on one of the little laneways that runs off Little
it's
Bourke
worth
Street.
A try.
Then there is the New Kum Din. The New Kum Din is some of the finest Chinese food. They have these money bags that are just stuffed full of very high quality prawn.
Right.
That are just exceptional.
New Kum Din. Okay.
So it's just one of these. It's one of these little lanes just off Little Bourke Street between Swanston and Russell.
Perfect.
So easy just sort of you know. Look, it's a spit from this studio here.
Yeah.
So you like to eat Asian food?
Love Asian food. But mainly Chinese, Vietnamese.
Yep.
Thai only because of the sort of, there's a fair bit of chili I'm not a big fan of. But
aren't you?
Chinese cuisine for me is the ultimate cuisine. Their techniques are extraordinary. With, you know, they'll
precision?
Cook, yes, precision. They'll cook something three and four times.
Mm.
You know, they're sort of, one of my favorite sort of Chinese dishes is steamed pork belly with preserved vegetables. So they boil it, fry it, steam it.
Yep.
And it's got an inch of fat on it, on the pork belly. But it's not greasy.
No.
All that fat's been rendered out. So.
And it's exceptional. Yeah. There is a dish that they do that is a red braised pork.
Right.
And if you can find red braised pork in...
is it New Kum?
No, but the Chinese in general, the red braised pork is something that is...
Never come across it.
It's not done everywhere, but if you can find it, and I know there are some restaurants in Melbourne that do a red braised pork, it's just... Well, they often call it Will Chairman's pork or Mao.
Okay.
It's named for Chairman Mao, but that was his favourite dish, red braised. Just sensational. Mario's been here from Gerald's Bar and from Brooks. Gerald's Bar is in North Carlton.
Rathdown Street.
Rathdown Street, North Carlton. Brooks is on...
off Collins Street, basement 115 117 Collins Street via George Parade.
Do get out and check them out. Go in and check out Nick Pollard and Parsi Batanen on the 7th of April. Go to the website brooksofmelbourne.com.au and check out more. Mario, thank you so much for coming in and reminiscing with me for an hour. It's been a very delightful hour. It's taken me back.
Thank you, Pete.
Next week I will be here. Ben Shuri will be here. Luke Newen will be on the phone with us, and Heston Blumenthal, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be catching up with him this week for a bit of a chat, and you can share that chat next Saturday. We'll be flogging that on social media. Stand by. Until then, until I talk to you next week, please enjoy the Escape Pod. They're here to take you travelling this afternoon. Following them, the lovely boys from Fender Bender will be in to join you, and then we move through the afternoon through music and talk and get to an evening where you can boogie your bum off on Saturday night. Thanks for joining me. This is Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.